supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, believe it or not, it's getting close to be garlic planting time. Cats and kittens, yes, you don't wait until Columbus Day anymore. We'll walk you through the basics of garlic planting, where to find some garlic for planting, and especially talk about how to use that fabulous harvest you get around the 4th of July. But otherwise, it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're going to take that heaping helping at 1-888-346-9499. Steve, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Steve. How are you?
I'm really good. This is Hold Home Week, as I'm sure you know. It's Steve Sloan calling, and you and I worked together when you were the editor of Organic Gardening, and I was at Men's Health Magazine.
Very good, very good. Yes, and I had been the editor of Men's Health Newsletter before Organic Gardening, so I had great fun there. Yeah, those were great days to be at Rodale. Yeah, I remember you well. Yeah. Where are you now, man?
I'm the editorial director for the Saturday Evening Post, and a lot of people aren't aware, but this magazine is alive and well, and it's really pretty exciting.
That's great. So you got a gardening question for me?
Yes, we ran a place on LBI, Long Beach Island. It's actually due east of Philadelphia. It's a little barrier island, and I'm way up at the north end near the Barnegat Lighthouse. And it's a summer place only. That's where I'm in summer. And we've got a little deck, and I've got a patio garden with three tomato plants.
Right.
And I've got a tomato problem.
Okay.
I got plenty of sun, check. I obviously take care of the watering. And one of the plants is an heirloom variety, and I forget the exact name.
Doesn't matter.
In the context. It's a purple tomato.
Okay.
I got it in a little late. It's a late tomato, but it's coming along. So the plant is doing very well. It's very healthy. It has one very nice tomato on it, tons of flowers, but it's not fruiting anything beyond. It's like it's putting all its energy into that one tomato. I've been using organic fertilizer.
Now, are the tomatoes in containers?
Yes, they're basically in large pots.
Typically, heirloom varieties are 90-day tomatoes. So
right.
That's 90 days from the day you put the plants in the pot. So I think you're being a little impatient. You say they're getting... And how big are these pots?
The pots are at least 12 inches at the base, I think, and they're good-sized pots, and like probably 14 at the top. You know, they're...
Okay, that's
they're
close. And there's just one plant per pot.
One plant, and it's I've got the wireframe, you know, the
free support
wireframe support gauge,
and the
plant is grown filled up. It's over the top of the frame, and I've tied it neatly, and it's all. And I've been pruning it.
Why are you pruning it?
Well, I read. I pruned it.
The leaves are solar panels. The leaves are absorbing solar energy to fuel the development and flavor of the fruits. The more solar panels you take off your house, the less fruits you're going to get.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and it
well,
also
I read on a YouTube video that said, you know, pruning it. You know,
I read online that aliens from Area 51 killed JFK. So,
well, they did, right?
Yes, exactly. So don't sure. do anything you read online at any site other than mine. How often are you watering?
Daily.
Yeah, because they're getting dried out.
They get dried out pretty quick, but I mean, you know, they've got little, the little trays under them so that they hold.
Oh no,
water.
No, you got to get rid of those.
Oh really?
All you're doing is breeding mosquitoes. No, the roots have to dry out between waterings.
Okay.
So you might want to put a mulch on the surface of the soil. Tomatoes in containers is different than the ground. If they were actually in soil where their roots were under the soil line, then you shouldn't be watering any more than twice a week. But in containers, what I'd like you to do is try to get used to the weight of the containers, rock them, or get a wooden dowel and shove it down into the soil and make sure it's dry all the way down before you water. These puppies need to dry out between waterings.
Okay, well, that's a factor because I was wondering about that.
You're drowning.
They're getting too wet, yeah.
And you're a mosquito breeder.
Yeah.
Now, and they're getting full sun from first thing in the morning to late.
Yeah.
They're going to need afternoon shade.
There's no trees at all, so I thought they'd like that.
No. They need afternoon shade. They need you to set up a beach umbrella or some sort of a blanket or some sort of a sunshade. Give them shade after 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They're getting too much exposure, and don't forget they're getting probably a hellish wind, and they're probably getting salt spray. So make sure that you do keep them watered. Stop drowning them. Give them some afternoon shade. Tomato pollen fries when the temperature is like 92, 93 or above. So with the summer we've been having, with you down the shore with full sun exposure, I think your pollen has been frying on the plants. They're like us. They enjoy the morning sun, but they would love some afternoon shade. If you can cut the level of that sunlight after 2 or 3 in the afternoon, I think you'll see the plants perk up. I think you'll see more flowers becoming fruits. But this is happening to a lot of people this summer, Steve. The intense heat is frying the pollen on the plants. And sometimes when you give the plants that afternoon shade, you cool them down at just the right time to keep enough pollen alive to keep the plants happy and healthy. But just remember, you're in a difficult situation for tomatoes. You'd be doing much better if you were back in the city or back in the country somewhere. There's a reason these kind of fruiting plants don't exist naturally on barrier islands or near the ocean.
All right, great. Thank you. All right, talk to you later.
Take care, man. 1-888-346-9499. Reba, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you very much. I'm in Cookeville, Tennessee, Mike.
All right. A pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
What can we do for you?
Well, we've had a very warm winter resulting in numerous fleas in our yard.
Oh, I hate it.
Our dogs bring in fleas from outside to the house. They even give them to our cat. And I refuse to use chemicals on the dogs. I bathe them constantly, comb them constantly, but it's almost a losing battle. Could you suggest a natural flea fighter or give me a recipe to create one?
Well, there are two things you can do, one of which is so remarkably simple, people don't believe it'll work, but it's worked for me 3 separate times. And inside, once you get the fleas inside, you know the routine. You have to vacuum, throw away the bag, and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But there's always eggs you miss. There's always adult fleas you miss. And after a while, you get really, it gets really old to keep getting bitten on your ankles.
Yes, it does.
So you can either buy these devices or make them yourself. But they are simple flea traps. If you put a flea trap, which is simply a warm light source, you know, an old-fashioned incandescent light, over top of either soapy water or sticky stuff, turn off all the other lights in the room. Every living flea in the room will go towards the light and hop to its death in the water or onto the sticky paper. It works remarkably. I had a flea explosion in my basement a few years ago. I put all the light traps I had down there. Within a day, every piece of white sticky paper was black. I was changing the paper every day. And within a week, there were no new fleas down there, but I knew to freshen up the paper and leave the traps on for when the next cycle of eggs hatched. And then, without even thinking about it, I'd totally forgotten about it. I went down like 3 weeks later, and boom, the papers were covered again. And that was it. After that, it was over. And then outside, what you want to do, you want to go online. You'll have to buy these online. But you want beneficial nematodes. You will mail order these, and you'll get a little package in the mail, and inside will be a sponge or some other material, and you'll put it into a backpack sprayer that's never held chemicals or a watering can, and you'll put this material into the water. Inside are like 50 to 100 million little microscopic nematodes. You water them into your lawn, into a wet lawn in the evening, because they're very sensitive to light and dryness, and you want them to work their way under the soil line overnight. Fleas breed right at the soil line, and these nematodes will eat the flea larva outside in your lawn and break up the cycle. It is absolutely miraculous.
That sounds wonderful. Is there anything to put on the pets? Or do you need to do that?
Well, you know, the honest answer is yes, but they are, you know, insect growth regulators. They are technically chemicals. But insect growth regulators, IGRs, which are used in some of these products, they're not nerve disruptors. They're not toxic agents. They don't allow the insect to go through metamorphosis, to go from the larval to the adult stage. So I think they're what my good friend Bill Quarles calls common sense pest control. Because I can't think of much worse than having fleas in the house.
Oh, I know. It's incredibly horrible.
So that's a decision you have to make. That's a personal decision.
Right. Well, thank you so much. This will probably save my sanity.
Yeah, that's exactly what the fleas go after, Reba.
Thank you.
All right, good luck.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll appear at the Burpee Seed Company's historic Ford Hook Farm for their garden open and tomato tasting on Saturday, August 25th. Being garrulous about garlic from noon to 2 and not tasting tomatoes. Hey, but like you could make tomato sauce without great garlic? But don't go looking for all the details at the events and appearances section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to grow and use great garlic. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garlicky Garden.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden. Burpee is having an open house at their historic Ford Hook Farm headquarters in Doylestown on August 24th and 25th, featuring garden tours, guest lectures, and tomato tastings. Details at burpee.com.
You're listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY.
The Philadelphia Folk Festival proudly supports WHYY. This year's Folk Festival features Little Feat, John Hyatt and the Combo, Steve Earle and the Dukes, Trombone Shorty and Orleans Avenue, Lucinda Williams, Mike Cross, Mary Chapin Carpenter, and more at the Old Pool Farm near Schwanksville in Upper Salford Township, August 17th through the 19th. For a weekend of concerts, crafts, camping, and children's activities, the Philadelphia Folk Festival, 800-556-FOLK or folkfest.org.
This week, as we continue our series on religion and money,
we're encouraged by the teachings of our faith regarding provident living. We should live within our means and thinking much more about family and providing for our family and our children as opposed to just enriching ourselves.
I'm Tess Vigeland, Financial Lessons from the Mormon Church, next time on Marketplace Money from 8 p.m. This afternoon at 3 on WHYY.
I'm taking a look at the WHYY forecast now. Mostly cloudy skies today. Perhaps a ray or two of sunshine poking through. There is the chance for thunderstorms. The high about 84. Right now it's 82 degrees.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, garlic, garlic, garlic. It's almost time to get your garlic in the ground. It's certainly time for you to find garlic to plant. And I've got some tips for garlic growers about how to preserve this year's fabulous harvest. But mostly it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking that heap and helping of your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. At 1-888-346-9499. Joy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Joy. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
And where is Joy doing pretty good?
I'm in Bakersville, North Carolina.
Okay, very good. I know where that is. What can we do you for?
I'm house hunting right now, and I found a potential house that we're interested in, but it's right next door to a Christmas tree farm. So I was trying to do some research on whether or not living next to one was safe, because all our friends around here are telling us that it's not safe to do that. So I even called the Cooperative Extension Agency to see what they thought, and they basically told me that they're using less pesticides than they used to use, but that they do use Roundup. And I didn't really like that answer, because I don't really like Roundup. So I guess I'm just asking what your opinion would be on living next to a Christmas tree farm, that if you know that the farmer uses Roundup.
I could probably personally not live next to a conventional farm. Now, the people who make the herbicide you're talking about, they've gone to great lengths to try to convince people it's very safe. We've had a guy on our show, Dr. Rick Relia from the University of Pittsburgh, many times. I believe his research clearly shows that Roundup kills amphibians like frogs and toads. And there's a lot of research, some from this country, some from overseas, that it's a human hormonal disruptor, which would be the biggest personal threat to you. But, you know, now you also have to say you could live next to an idiot who had their lawn sprayed every week.
Exactly. So I kind of wondered if there's anywhere safe.
I will tell you that when we bought our house, we did not, you couldn't know your neighbors. You know, we didn't know who they were yet. And luckily, as the years progressed, we found that they're like fabulous people who don't spray anything. And then the first summer we were there, we found, without doing the research up front, our township controls all the roadway weeds mechanically. I don't even think they have spray trucks. They have these giant devices that just mow the sides of the roadways, and these giant arms that go up and tear apart trash, trees. So they do everything mechanically. So I'm in this wonderful safety zone. But one of the biggest issues we face is toxic neighbors. It's a huge issue. Anybody who buys into a kind of a planned community, any kind of that has a homeowners association, you know, they find it's not next door. It's in the front of their house. It's while their windows are open, they're spraying things all the time. So how many acres would you be buying?
Not a huge amount, maybe 4 or 5.
Oh, that sounds good to me. 5 acres in Independence. That was the old rule. You could be self-sufficient on 5 acres. Now, there's a lot of people who say you can be self-sufficient on a lot less than that now because we've gotten very good with organic agriculture. But there is an existing house, and it's right next to the farm?
Yes.
Yeah. They are probably going to be spraying some herbicides. Now, there are organic Christmas tree associations. There are organic tree farms that are getting more and more popular. I don't imagine there's any chance. And you talk to the county extension agent who apparently knows the farmers and advises them.
Yes, but I didn't ask him specifically about this farmer.
Right, he said in general, Christmas tree farms, their biggest issue is weeds. So most of them are going to be spraying chemical herbicides, because honestly, it is difficult to control weeds mechanically on a tree farm because you'd always be risking impacting the roots of the tree. I will say that most of the work done on a Christmas tree farm is manual. You know, they're out there pruning the trees. The better farms are doing it practically weekly, you know, to make sure they grow into that perfect Christmas tree shape. Do you have any idea where your well is?
Well, there's a spring, and it's on the opposite side.
Oh, there's a spring on the opposite side.
And it's up the hill away from the house on the opposite side. So
I like
that is a good sign. And then there's even a stream, a very small stream that runs behind the house, but it runs in the direction of the Christmas tree farm.
Why don't you talk to the farmer? Why don't you just take the bull by the horns and introduce yourself? Because if you're going to be neighbors, you're going to want some agreement about you being notified if they are using these things. Maybe you can establish a buffer zone. It would be nice if the buffer zone stopped any, if it is Roundup, which we don't know. There's a lot of other herbicides out there, but it'd be nice no matter what the herbicide is if it be kept out of that stream water. Ask them, you know, have you ever considered switching to the new herbicides like Ironex that are made with iron as the active ingredient? They seem to work sensational, and they have a very low impact on the environment. But I've heard horror stories worse than this about people who just bought a suburban house, and then they found out the person next to them was Captain Toxic. So I would say, you know, don't be aggressive. Don't be confrontational, but just say you're thinking about buying the house next door and you have concerns about living next to any farm, and what do you use and how often do you use it, and just on the bizarre chance that you could maybe have a property next to it, check out the Organic Christmas Tree Association. I know they're getting bigger and bigger, and they, of course, list the farms because they want people to patronize them. But you're asking all the right questions, but you have to ask the farmers.
Okay, I'll do that.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
1-888-346-9499. Frank, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Yeah, hi, Mike. I've got some question about basil leaves.
Okay, I got a question for you, Frank.
Okay.
Where are you?
In Philadelphia.
Where?
Center City.
Oh, okay, very good. I'll accept that as a neighborhood. What's wrong with your Center City basil?
They got holes in them.
Right.
And I think some little critters have been munching on them.
Critters as opposed to insects?
Well, you know, some kind of little bugs or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
I reserve critter for mammalian.
Oh, okay. No,
pests.
It's not mammalian. It's of the insect variety, I guess.
Okay, so you're in Center City. Are you growing? Do you have a little garden? You growing in containers? Do you belong to a community garden?
Growing in containers. I have a postage stamp of a backyard, so I can't grow much of anything.
What kind of containers you growing in?
You know, a clay pot with another maybe plastic pot to catch the water. And I water it once
a minute.
Day.
Wait a minute. You mean you have a saucer underneath to hold the water?
I make sure it doesn't hold a lot of water. I know about that, so I don't do that.
Okay, because, you know, you'll be breeding mosquitoes
and rotting
your plants. And you know, although obviously people love clay, they love terracotta, were you to switch to plastic pots, they would retain water longer and you wouldn't have to water every day. And you could, like, perhaps go away for a couple of days and not come home to dead plants.
Oh, that's good to know. I didn't know that.
But none of that has anything to do with a couple of little bugs eating your basil. Are the holes, like, in the center of the plant or on the edges of the leaves?
They're in both. Sometimes in the center, sometimes off to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And I do try to pick at it every day to, you know, take the top off so it can keep growing from
right.
the top.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
That thing.
Right, you're pinching the top of the plant to prevent flowering.
Exactly.
Right. Is this large Italian leaf basil?
The one I have is not that large. My neighbor has one that is large, and I was just looking this morning, and they didn't have any holes in hers, so I don't know where they got theirs.
Oh, no. well, I mean, it doesn't matter where they got theirs, but they're growing Italian large leaf basil, the one
yes.
with the big leaves, and you're growing... And you're growing one of the more specialty basils.
Yeah, I guess so. That's probably true.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think, you know, there's still plenty of time to be growing more basil, Frank. You can go out and buy a pack of seeds, get plants started. Basil will grow in your Center City garden through Halloween and perhaps beyond.
Really?
Yeah, I think the large leaf Italian-style basil, the Genovese, it's the traditional basil. It would probably be the least attractive to pests.
Whereby
sometimes the specialty basils, I've noticed this with my hostas. My regular dirt green hostas don't get the kind of slug attack that my variegated hostas do. The specialty ones are often more attractive to pests. Now, I will ask, what are you feeding your basil?
Just water.
Okay, so what did you fill the containers with?
Oh, potting soil.
Okay, so where's the plant food?
I don't know that there is any other than water.
Water is not food, Frank.
Okay.
I think if I locked you in a room and gave you all the water you wanted, I think you'd be really hungry on day 4 or 5.
This is probably true.
So what I want you to do is see what your neighbor has. If they have Miracle-Gro or something like that, say forget it. But if they have a nice liquid fish and seaweed mix or a little bit of compost, I think your plant could use some nutrition because plants that are healthy and growing in the right kind of environment are naturally pest resistant.
I see. Huh.
So you might want to start a couple different varieties. You definitely want to feed your plant, but obviously it's not fun to eat leaves with little holes in them.
I know.
But as long as we're sure it's not mice, which would only be nibbling at the edges, it's still perfectly safe to eat, and you can still make pesto from them.
Right. Did you say mice? M-I-C-E?
Yes, mice are a notorious pest of plants that are grown close to the ground. If you want to put your mind at ease, just get a simple snap trap and put it out next to the plant at night, baited with peanut butter.
Okay.
And if you don't catch anything, then it's just bugs. And I think if you improve the health of the plant, first of all, you won't get as much nibbling at it. And I think it might be smart, and especially if you like basil, the large leaf Italian basil gives you like 10 times more than the specialty basils.
And I won't die if I eat these basil leaves with holes in them, if I properly wash it.
Correct. Oh, yeah, if you wash it, even if it was a mouse, it's safe.
Okay.
All right, man?
Thank you very much.
Good luck, Frank.
Thank you. Take care.
1-888-346-9499. Victor, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Yes, hello, Mike. How are you?
I am doing well today. Vic, how are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. It's kind of hot. Weather's pretty good here, but we've had a lot of hot days this summer.
And where is here?
Millersville, Maryland. It's about 5 or 10 miles south of Baltimore. Listen to you on WTOP every week, so... I've learned a lot over the years from you.
Well, thank you. So you're a listener from the all-news station in Washington, D.C., where I do Garden Minutes every Saturday.
Yes, sir.
So what can we do for Victor in Maryland?
Well, we have this rhododendron that's probably at least 20 years old, and it's always done very well, probably at least 9 feet tall, just a very beautiful plant. And I'm not sure what's caused it, but we've had some really hot weather, probably at least 5 days of at least 105 degrees. And since then, like 70% of the plant has basically died off, except for like the outer reaches, the top of the plant, but the inner parts pretty much all died off. I've trimmed back, pruned the dead branches, and it's hanging on. It's doing pretty well, the parts that have survived. But I'm just curious as to, you know, if the hot weather may have caused this or something else may have happened, or, you know, what can I do to fix this? So,
I believe this has been the hottest summer in history, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So rhododendrons are typically understory plants in the wild. If you go up into the mountains in the Carolinas where the rhododendron forests are, the native rhododendrons, they're all growing beautifully, but they're under a hardwood canopy. So a lot of times when people have rhododendrons in full sun, the plants get a little stressed. And what a lot of people don't realize is rhododendrons and azaleas, which are the same plant family, are some of the neediest plants for water. Azaleas show it a little bit faster than rhododendrons because rhododendrons are, you know, almost like succulent in their leaf quality, and the trunks get so big. But they do suffer drought stress more than almost any other landscape plant we have. And I've often written that azaleas and rhododendrons should be the first plants to get the hose dripping at their base during a drought. Were you watering them during the drought?
I do water it in the morning over the years. And with all this hot weather, I actually was giving it more water this year, but it,
now the way to water these plants and all other landscape plants is to let a hose drip at the base maybe twice a week for several hours each time.
Right. Yeah, I was doing it for probably about a half hour twice a week.
Okay. Well, that's better than nothing, Vic. And were you letting the hose drip at their base?
Yes. Yeah, just a slow drip.
In the future, like 3 hours, if it's just a slow drip.
Okay.
Did you make sure when you were pruning out the, quote, dead parts that there were no flower buds at the tips?
Right, yeah, there was nothing. Everything pretty much died and all of that. But the sections that are still alive still have the flower buds.
If you took off a quarter to a third of the plant already because you got rid of all the parts that you couldn't stand looking at anymore, right?
Correct.
If you've done that much, then be done for now. You have my permission to take one or two more branches or something like that. But oddly enough, do it now rather than later. You don't want to be pruning at any time near the dormancy period where it's going to go to sleep for the winter. You don't want to disturb dormancy because it's already stressed. I would put down an inch of milled peat moss around the base of the plant, and I would cover that with half an inch of compost.
Okay.
Just to make sure the soil is nice and acidic and to give it a nice natural feeding. Just give it some natural nutrients. It'll also help keep some moisture in the soil. Switch to the deep watering I've described when we don't get rain. And then in the spring, as soon as it blooms out, then go in and remove any other parts that are dead and repeat the peat moss and compost. And from that point on, I believe it'll be in a recovery stage and look a little bit better every season, to where 5 years from now somebody will say, hey, I thought that rhododendron died. And you're going to go, oh, right. Yeah, no, it got better.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And I'll keep listening on WTOP and keep up the good work. And thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind gardeners that it'll soon be time all across the nation for harvest fairs and tomato tastings. Hint, if you want to enter your tomatoes in a flavor fray, cut back on their watering at least a week in advance. Don't enter tomatoes that have set ripe on the vine for more than a day. Pick your fighters first thing in the morning and keep them out of direct sun and away from refrigeration on the way to the arena. But don't go babying your brandy wines just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls, how to plant garlic, how to get garlic for planting, and how to utilize garlic you may have planted last year. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee, a national supplier of seeds, plants, and bulbs, supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds growers that now is the time to start fall crops like broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower, and to get ready for garlic planting. More information at burpee.com.
You're listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY. More of Mike in just a moment.
The Virtua Joint Replacement Institute supports WHYY. Virtua's orthopedic physicians are national pioneers of minimally invasive joint replacement. With their advanced technique for knee replacement, the quadriceps tendon is not cut, so patients recover faster. Many who have this knee replacement procedure actually go home the same day. To learn more about this surgery, the number for the Virtua Joint Replacement Institute is 855-VIRTUA3. 855-847-8823.
Announcing the 2012 WHYY Connections Festival, September 6th through 9th. 4 days of free arts and culture events, including an outdoor concert featuring Yola Tango, Frank Turner, Maps and Atlases, and more, Saturday, September 8th. And on September 9th, performances by Fred Parris and the Five Satins, Charlie Gracie, and more at the Philadelphia Doo-Wop Festival. More artists and events to come. Visit WHYY.org/connections festival.
Taking a look at the WHYY forecast, mostly cloudy skies today and humid, and there's the chance for a thunderstorm later on. The high temperature about 83. Tonight, overcast and muggy, the low dipping to 70. Beautiful day tomorrow, mostly sunny for Sunday with a high of 87. Monday, pretty much the same, sunshine, high in the upper 80s. Tuesday, there is the chance for a stray thunderstorm. Tuesday's high, 88. And Wednesday, partly cloudy with a high of 85. Right now it's 83 degrees.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week, all about garlic. I have been getting my garlic in the ground around Labor Day. No, I don't wait till October anymore, and I get bigger, better, healthier garlic for my troubles, which means it's time to make sure you've got your planting garlic in hand. And what should you do with your garlic from this year's harvest to make sure you get the most out of it before it starts sprouting and its flavor changes? All these questions, we'll answer them all after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Lane, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Lane. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Where is Lane all right?
Avalon, New Jersey.
Cooler by a mile, a fabled Jersey Shore town. Are you enjoying the ocean this year?
Oh, it's very nice. Thank you.
All right. What can we do for Lane in Avalon, New Jersey?
I have euonymus bushes planted all around my lower porch. And around the time that they start to blossom, a zillion flies come out and attack the blossoms. And it's gotten to be more and more plentiful over the last 3 years. And I've got to find a way, barring the use of pesticides, to get rid of them.
Why do you think they're attacking the flowers as opposed to pollinating them?
Because they eat them entirely.
Oh, well, that would be bad.
Yes. Well, and also it's a nuisance because I don't have a screened-in porch.
Right.
I have an open porch. And you can actually hear them making the sound of zzzz. There are so many of them.
And they look like houseflies.
They look like botflies. They've got a luminescent body and a brown face and black wings.
And do they bite humans?
I think they will when they can, yes.
They almost sound like the kind of flies that I can remember terrorizing me at different beaches around the country.
No, these aren't greenheads.
No?
No greenheads. No, these are, I think that they're botflies.
Well, I'm not convinced. Now, what is the damage after the flies are gone?
No blossoms.
But the blossoms are there when the flies are attracted to them.
That's right.
And you're sure the flies are eating them and not pollinating them?
Crisscross.
Okay.
I think that from what I've read, they burrow under the ground and lay eggs, and that's why every year I'm getting more and more of them.
That would make sense. I'm not familiar with every pest, and typically when this happens, what's happening is that flies do pollinate a remarkable number of plants in the United States. You know, there's a lot of people who complain that, you know, the flies come around at the same time every year, and they're hanging around their plants. And, of course, in those cases, the flies are actually doing good work of pollination.
Yes, well, I'm not thanking these.
I hear you. Do you have any kind of mulch underneath these plants?
No.
Because you seem to know a lot more about these pests than I do. You're saying they're true flies, right?
They are true flies.
And they're going to lay eggs in the soil.
They have almost a Japanese beetle body. You know, it's luminescent.
Okay.
And little brown faces.
Oh, they sound so cute, Lane.
Maybe one or two would be cute, but yeah. Thousands are not.
Without looking anything up, and I'm sure this is a pest that I should know, you know what you could even do that would be really mean that might interest you?
What?
You could just lay plastic or butcher paper or something like that around the base of the plants and actually prevent the physical egg laying. You know, lay something solid across the surface for the period of time that they lay their eggs in the soil and hold it down on the sides. And then when that period of time is gone, when you see no more flies, when there's no more egg laying that could be going on, you would remove the physical barrier. And I bet that would break the cycle tremendously.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I thought about, how about a garlic spray? Would that work?
You would spray that on the plants right before the flowers open to try and repel the flies. But if they are really pupating in the soil underneath the plants,
right,
it would be very difficult, I would think, to repel them because it's not like they're flying in from a mile away.
No.
And they've got a lot of choices. They've kind of set up housekeeping. There is something we could drench the soil with that would be very interesting.
Oh, good.
You've seen these mosquito dunks in the hardware stores where if you have a pond or a water feature, you throw this little donut or briquette into the water and it prevents mosquitoes from breeding.
No, but I can find them, I'm sure.
This is a natural substance called BTI. It's a naturally occurring soil organism, and they sell it in liquid form to use around houseplants that have fungus nets, which are flies that breed in moist soil. Any fly that breeds in moist soil would be killed by BTI. So you could drench the soil, and the the fungus gnat drenches that I've seen are sold in fairly large quantities, so this would not be difficult to do.
Oh, good.
And I think it would be impossible for them to complete their metamorphosis.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
With BTI in the soil, although obviously a physical barrier on the surface of the soil temporarily is going to be your cheapest resource. Otherwise, when they show up, I mean, I love the idea of a garlic spray, and you can try it. I just don't think they're going to be repelled by it because this seems to be a one-food insect breeding underneath the food. They're going to fight their way through a, quote, repellent. But if you were to spray the flowers with either neem or spinosad, those are both organic insecticides, as soon as these flies start eating, they would be killed.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay, so if you want more information on these things, go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org, go to Garden Answers A to Z, and remember to look up fungus gnat. That'll give you all the information about BTI being used as a soil drench, and just try to remember neem or spinosads, or just look up organic insecticides. Those are numbers one and two in the world today.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed your program.
Well, thank you, Lane. I hope you continue to.
All right.
Take care.
You too. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Charlie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Charlie, how are you, sir?
Okay, I'm doing good. I live in Broomall. I'm just outside the city.
Philadelphia.
What I've done is, since I've moved here, I put in two red wood boxes. They're 10 foot by 4 feet wide.
Oh, raised beds. Yeah, good.
And I put mushroom soil in there.
Okay.
And what I want to know is, at the end of the season, when I pull all that stuff out of there, what should I put in there? Should I just put the compost of, let's say, leaves?
Well, at the end of the season, when you pull out, I presume you got tomatoes, cucumbers, things like that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, when you remove your spent plants, the smartest thing you can do is to shred up a whole bunch of fall leaves, like buy a leaf blower that has a reverse setting, because then it shreds, you know, shreds them as it sucks them up.
Yes.
And cover your beds with 1 to 2 inches of shredded leaf mulch.
Okay.
This will keep any nutrients that are in the soil. You used aged mushroom soil when you built the beds?
Yes. Been in there since March.
Well, oh, so this is their first year?
No, this is the first year I put it in.
Oh, yeah. So there, the mushroom soil will still have nutrients.
Oh, okay.
And the best way to keep those nutrients from, like, oxidizing or being lost through runoff is simply a nice natural mulch. Now, by using shredded leaves, you're also going to encourage earthworms. They will love living under that leaf litter. And whenever the temperature is warm enough and whenever there's enough moisture in the soil, they'll be working at taking the nutrients in your soil and actually improving them. So that by the time you get to spring next year, instead of having lost nutrients with uncovered beds over the winter, you will have improved your nutrients. And then, and of course, you've also prevented chickweed and all these winter annuals from getting established in your raised beds.
Okay.
So then, in the spring, what you would do, typically the advice, is you remove all of the leaf mulch. Just rake it off or hoe it off. And just stack it to the side. And the only reason you're doing this is the mulch will keep the beds cool. And you want them to warm up quickly in the spring so you can get planting earlier. And then as soon as you have your new plants in, put that mulch right back on top to control weeds.
Okay.
And if you suck up more leaves than you need just to cover your beds, and you pile those leaves up or put them in a composter and mix in some coffee grounds, by the time you're ready to plant, you'll have fresh compost. And then what you would do, because you built raised beds that are only 4 foot wide, you're never going to till them again. You're never going to work that soil. After you take the leaf mulch off, you would put down the compost just right on top of the surface. and that will feed your plants. And then when you put your plants in, you would replace the leaf mulch or use other leaf mulch to prevent weeds, and you would have a very sustainable system by simply putting 2 inches of well-shredded leaves on top of your bed over winter. That is really the smart money. You would be preventing serious weed problems, preserving all your nutrients, and like I said, it's an invitation to earthworms to move in.
Okay.
Trust your own senses. You'll be able to tell quality from none.
Okay.
All right, man?
You're right.
Good luck. Take care.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. If stores are having back-to-school sales, that means it's almost garlic planting time. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, read this week's question.
Nicole in Wayne, Pennsylvania writes, I've been growing garlic for several years, saving and replanting my largest cloves in rich soil, about 5 inches apart in a raised bed in October. I normally harvest around the end of July, but I went away at the beginning of July this year and didn't dig up any garlic first, even though the bottom leaves were getting brown and our chrysanthemums had already finished blooming. The stalks were mostly brown when I got home 10 days later, so I quickly pulled all the garlic. The bulbs are huge and beautiful, but the cloves are separating from the stalks. I've read that they probably won't keep well now, and that maybe I should peel and freeze a lot of them. But what can I do to preserve the best cloves for my new crop? Will they last until October, just hanging in a dry place? We don't have air conditioning, so there is no, quote, cool place. Should I put them in a refrigerator, freeze them? I'd appreciate your advice as soon as possible.
Well, I got about 8 things I want to say first here, but don't ever put garlic in the refrigerator or freezer wins. Don't. If you do, I will come and plant bindweed and thistle in your garden. A close second is don't ever harvest garlic strictly by the calendar. You do have a huge amount of wiggle room on the planting time, but not on the harvesting. As a garlic-growing friend of mine learned the hard way this year, you need to start pulling up test bulbs when the bottom third of most of the plants has turned brown, which his did in early June. Same thing happened to plants I was growing from his cloves in my own garden. I followed my one-third brown rule, even though it meant I was theoretically harvesting a month early, and I got big, great-looking heads with perfect wrappers. He did not. Now, don't worry about wasting any test plants that reveal it isn't harvest time yet. All parts of the garlic plant are edible at all stages of growth. So take those big leeks inside, clean them up, and use them to season a garlicky dish. And keep testing weekly. If you wait too long, the protective wrappers will begin to split, which can severely limit the life and quality of the harvest. And the, quote, end of July sounds much too late for a suburb of Philadelphia. I'm in a rural area 50 miles north of there, and I get nervous if I'm not pulling my garlic by the 4th of July. Okay, now there's a big difference between the cloves separating from the stem and the wrappers coming off the cloves. Sooner or later, you have to take the cloves off the stem anyway, so that's no big whoop. The cloves whose paper wrappers have split open will quickly turn a brownish yellow and become useless. So that's always job number one with a garlic harvest. Carefully examine every bulb and separate out any with damaged wrappers. Cut any yellow areas off the affected cloves, chop up the nice white parts, and dry them in a dehydrator or food dryer. When those little chunks of garlic are bone dry, put them in a glass jar with a tight-fitting lid and add as many of those little desiccating pouches as you can. You know, the things packed with vitamins and such to keep them fresh and dry. Later on, you can grind up those chunks and make the world's finest garlic powder. Cloves with perfect wrappers should keep just fine until planting time, and they don't need air conditioning. Cool and dry just means a non-damp area that stays as cool as possible. My harvest is under a ceiling fan out on a screen porch. In previous years, it used to hang on the wall of our kitchen, also cooled by ceiling fans. Just don't put your garlic in a dank basement or expose it to direct sun. And don't wait until October to plant. An old Italian gentleman once told me to plant your garlic on the first day the kids go back to school and harvest it on the last day of school. Now, I'm a little north of where that advice works well for harvesting, but I have been following his planting timing and getting my cloves in the ground around Labor Day ever since with great results. Some of the hardneck varieties, whose flavor I vastly prefer, are even beginning to show the first signs of little green sprouts by then. Sprouted garlic doesn't taste very good, but it's fine to plant. Now, if you don't have your own cloves to replant, buy some starter garlic from a reputable seed company or a local grower. Farmers markets can be great sources of planting stock. Plant the individual cloves at least 6 inches apart in your loosest, richest soil. In most of the country, plant so there's about 6 inches from the base of the planted clove to the top of the soil. In areas with extreme winters, plant a little deeper and not in raised beds. Well, that sure was a lot of good advice about growing and using great garlic, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website, where you can read it over carefully and follow links to even more awesome articles about garlic planting. Just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to rip off my wrappers if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Please put the actual subject in the subject line, not help or question or stuff like that. And check Foist to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week, find the solution to hundreds of garden problems in our Garden Answers A to Z section, and or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Kevin Love Train Griffin. Our webmaster is Baneful Rich Banowitz. His faithful internet companion is Sarah Kazar. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at our brand new Facebook page. You might even like it. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, hint, hint. The well-wrapped Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Going back to school before it's even garlic planting time is our production assistant, Kelly Haggerty. Kelly, we hardly knew you. Enjoying Kelly's going away cake is our esteemed editor, Al Banks. I'm forgotten but not gone, Mike McGrath. So I'll see you next week.
And next week, Mike cogitates on the correct way to apply corn gluten in the fall. Also, if you ever need to know about cajoling cabbage or catnip killing cankerworm or the Colorado potato beetle, Mike is king of the correct way to cultivate. He'll answer your questions, so join him Saturday mornings at 11 for You Bet Your Garden right here on WHYY.
I'm Bob Garfield, and on this week's On the Media, a comedian gets more retweets making fun of a presidential candidate than the candidate